Well, good evening and welcome to Trinity Church Liphook. My name's Sean, if you've not met me already. It's great to have you here. We're in a series of life events. You'll see some publicity on your tables, just those flyers. You can take one home if you want to. And we're running this period of events just to try to introduce people to the message of Jesus. And in the evening, we're looking at various sort of hot questions that people might have in their mind and like an answer for. And this evening, we're looking at the topic, doesn't religion ruin life? And how it's going to operate is that I'm going to speak for a few minutes, and then what we'll do is we'll have a break for tea, coffee, and writing down any questions. You see bits of paper on the table. You can write questions down there, and then we'll come back together and I will field the questions as best as I am able. I can't promise answers, but I definitely will promise to get you an answer for next time. So I'm just putting that up front straight away. So this evening we're looking at, doesn't religion ruin life? Maybe you've heard somebody say to you before, you are ruining my life. That's the sort of phrase, isn't it, that many a grumpy teenager has levelled at their parent. Maybe when a parent has suggested that they should be home by 10 p.m, or maybe they should do their homework or study for their exams. Maybe your children have never said it, but we were all children once. Maybe you said it to your parents, or at least you felt and thought it. We all understand the idea, I hope, is that through the reactions or the actions of one person or a group of people, we ruin someone's or maybe many people's lives. Instinctively, we all recoil from that, don't we? We wouldn't want to ruin somebody else's life. None of us, I hope, would want to do that. But it's a challenge that is often levelled at Christians. We would want to say that in our message about Jesus, you can come and find real and true life. Indeed, Jesus says that he came to bring life to the full. But some respondents say that we're not bringing life to the full, but rather religion ruins life. Religion is the problem, not the solution. Some of us here tonight might feel this very keenly. Maybe there is great hurt in your past, and for good reason you blame religion for it. So does religion ruin life, or is religion the thing that we all really need? Well, firstly, I'd like to be really clear and say that much wrong has been done in the name of religion. Much wrong has been done in the name of the religion. If you have any knowledge of history, you'll know that people throughout the world have done terrible things and claimed that their religion compelled them to do it. That they did unspeakable acts because of their faith. Now, I can't speak for other world religions, but for the Christian faith, those who claim to trust in and follow Jesus, there are sadly many examples. We could think of the Crusades in the Middle Ages. We could think of the Inquisition. We could think of some colonization attempts in the Americas by Europeans. We could think of intolerance for those who differ on some point of belief or practice. Maybe other examples from history or your personal life jump out at you. Maybe the most telling examples are those of the various abuse scandals that have come to light over recent years, where those in religious power have used their position to hurt people. As a Christian, these things are upsetting and sad and shameful. Sometimes Christians try to distance themselves from these things. They'll argue, well, that these weren't really true Christians who did these things. They only claimed to be Christians. And that might be easy to do in some circumstances, but often it just doesn't work. Or someone might argue that their religious reasons weren't the whole story. It was greed and other selfish wickedness that really drove their behavior. not the Christian faith. But again, even if that is the case, which it no doubt was, we can't let people off the hook. We have to say, friends, Christians have done bad things that have hurt and ruined people's lives. And I'm sure that other world religions have their share of horrors too. But in addition to these more obvious and serious issues, some will just say, well, religion is restrictive and stops us living the way we want to. It's certainly the case that people who have religious convictions will not always be agreed with, and some might find their views intolerable. Maybe that's you, I don't know. We've seen some of this in recent debates in the UK Parliament over assisted suicide or assisted dying. Some people who are for a change in the law have accused people who disagree with them that they're just letting their religion rule their head and ruin other people's lives and choices. So religion has done terrible things, and for some it's doing a lot of small things that are deeply irritating and restrictive. So friends, if that's the case, well, can't we just get rid of religion? Well, the answer, I think, is no. Although the church has lost many of its members in the developed West, it shows no sign of slowing down from a global perspective. And although in the West the church has struggled, there are arguably some green shoots of growth, particularly among young people, with Bible sales dramatically increasing over the past few years. You might have heard of this. Some people are calling it a quiet revival. But of course, we'll need to see how that shakes out over time, if that's true or not. And the same goes for other world religions. The Islamic world isn't going to go away anytime soon. And the same, no doubt, goes for other faiths. We appear to live in a world that is full of religion, of one sort or another. And it doesn't look like religion is going to go away anytime soon. Well, this leaves us in a difficult position, doesn't it? If religion is a problem, yet we can't get rid of it, well, what do we do? Well, in the 20th century, various people did try to do something about it. You might have heard of this in the various communist states that flourished in the 20th century. They didn't just try to dissuade people that religion is a silly thing to do. Just turn away from it and all will be well. No, what they did was they thought, well, we just need to kill these people. We need to persecute them. And that was tried, but to no avail. So what should we do? Well, I think firstly we need to ask ourselves, what if religion were true? What if religion were true? When we think of religion as a problem, we tend to think of it as a malevolent force that is a lie, that it is mythical nonsense, and it ruins people's lives. Maybe that's what you think. But the problem, of course, is that religions tend to claim that they're true, that they're not myth. Christians don't believe the Bible is a fairy story that is some way comforting for us. We believe it's true. And no doubt other world religions would say the same thing about their beliefs. They don't believe them as a sort of comfort blanket, as an abstraction. They believe them to be reality and a true account of reality. But if there is a true religion, if it is not a myth and not lies, then that religion isn't a problem, but it is the solution. So as we look at religions that can seem so problematic, we have to ask ourselves, what if one of them were true? And I say one of them because they all tend to be mutually exclusive. Sometimes people say, oh, all religions, they all lead to the same end. But the truth claims of the various world religions pretty much all contradict each other. They can't all be right. So when we look at these religions, we have to ask, well, which one is true? And together with that question, we also need to ask, does the religion that we're looking at explain the mistakes of its followers? Now, I can't speak for other world religions, nor would I want to. I want to speak for the Christian faith. I'll let other people of different religious viewpoints speak for themselves. So two things we need to think through. Is the Christian faith true? And does it explain the problem we all have with the horrors carried out in the name of the Christian religion? Well, firstly, and very briefly, I think we can make a good case for the truth of the Christian faith. We could be here for some time, and fear not, friends, I'm not going to keep you here for the next 5 or 6 hours working through every truth claim in the Bible. But let me focus on the key and central truth claim of the Christian faith, the resurrection, something we'll be thinking about in a few weeks' time at Easter weekend. This is the key truth of the Christian faith. And one writer says in the Bible that if it isn't true, then our faith is futile and we are to be pitied of all people. So if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, if we're Christians, then we're to be pitied. We're to be laughed at. We're to be mocked. Did Jesus then really die? Did he really come back to life? Well, firstly, did he die? As you read the accounts in the Gospels, you see on your table a Gospel called the Gospel of John, an account of Jesus' life. As we read that Gospel and the other three that we find in the New Testament, it seems really clear, to me at least, that Jesus did indeed die. He was put to death publicly, and those carrying out the execution were proficient at that sort of thing. They wouldn't have messed it up. They weren't amateurs. It was a common thing for them to do, and they were good at it. They even checked that he was dead before they took him down from the cross. Secondly, did he rise again? Again, we've got the eyewitness testimonies in John's Gospel and then the other three Gospel accounts that say that he did. There were many who saw him when he was raised back to life. Too many for them to hallucinate it together. Sometimes people say that, oh, it was mass hallucination. I don't think so. And the resurrection changed the lives of Jesus' followers forever. They boldly poured out their lives to declare the good news that Jesus indeed had risen from the dead. And friends, I don't know about you, but that's not the sort of thing I'd do for a lie. You don't give up everything and go around proclaiming a message and then face violence and death for doing so. They were completely changed by this message, and they made sure we would know about it with some authority as they recounted their eyewitness testimony in the four Gospel accounts we have in the New Testament. So we see, friends, I think, that the Christian faith can be said to be true. It's not a myth or nice stories, but claims to be true, and it seems reasonable, I think, to believe those truth claims and the account of those claims. But how does the Christian faith then, if it's true, how does it handle the behaviour of the so-called Christians throughout the centuries and their sometimes terrible behaviour? Well, firstly, I think the Bible is really clear that terrible behaviour is not what they should have done. If you were to read the New Testament, you will find nowhere a plan to wage holy war on the nations. You will find nowhere that Christians are to forcibly convert anyone to their faith. You will read nowhere that Christians are to persecute others for their views, or for their behaviours for that matter. Secondly, the Christian faith is a faith that takes a dim view of religiosity. You might find that somewhat surprising, but it's true. Jesus overturned and highlighted the failures and shortcomings of the religiosity of his day. Jesus was constantly being attacked, not by the worst of people, but by the religious leaders. They sought to kill him, and they succeeded. When we look at the Bible more widely, anything that smacks of man-made religion is, of course, thought badly as well. In the Old Testament, idolatry is looked down upon very badly. And in the New Testament, any attempt to import religiosity, to try to work your way to God's good books, is completely rejected as well. But the Christian faith also has a dim view of its own members. I don't know if you knew that. The Bible doesn't make out that Christians are perfect. Early leaders included a former opponent who consented to the judicial murder of somebody, of a Christian rather, and someone who had run away and abandoned Jesus at his hour of greatest need. Christians and their early leaders were deeply imperfect people. And from the writings of the New Testament, we see that the early church was a complete mess. And just let me give you a bit of an explanation here. In the New Testament, there are four Gospels. Then there's an account called the Book of Acts that tells us about what happened in the early church. And then there's a bunch of letters. And in those letters, they're pretty much all dealing with problems. They're all dealing with problems of practice or belief. And if you have to write to people telling them that they've got problems with their beliefs or problems with their practice, that sort of suggests to you, doesn't it, that they've got problems, that they're not perfect, that they fall short in their life and in their belief. Christians always seem to have had problems understanding their faith rightly and living up to its high standards. I mean, Jesus set incredibly high standards. He calls us to love our neighbor as ourselves. He calls us to love other Christians. He calls us to love those we would not naturally love. He calls us to abandon boundary markers of this world and love across them. Love people who are different from us, from different sorts of backgrounds. James, one of the New Testament writers, and most likely Jesus' half-brother, summed up the standard that we're to aim for. We are to care for the outcast. He says, care for orphans and widows, the vulnerable in society. We're to be holy and not sinful. But the assumption is clearly, for James, that people won't do that. That's why he needs to tell. If you tell somebody something, it's because they need to hear it. And if they don't hear it, then they're going to likely not do as they're told. It's like with children. You know, you tell them to do something. The reason you do that is because if you don't tell them, they'll do it. Don't put your hand in the fire. If you don't tell them, they'll put their hand in the fire. The reason Christians are constantly being told in the New Testament documents, don't sin, don't believe this nonsense, because we're tempted to believe nonsense. We're tempted to do wrong things. Christians are people who are prone to wander. They are broken people seeking to live Jesus' way. The Bible pictures Christians as imperfect people, imperfectly following a perfect Savior. So we shouldn't be at all surprised, I think, that Christians make horrible mistakes and do terrible things. They are imperfect. They are sinners in need of a Savior. That doesn't excuse their behavior, but I think is an accurate account of their behavior. So let me conclude. Many Christians have done things that are not okay, and I'm not going to hide from that. We shouldn't. But if Christianity is true, and it gives adequate explanation for the reason those errors and mistakes happen, then I'd like to encourage you to give the Christian faith another look, if you haven't already. For if it's true, then we really can have life if we know Jesus. We can have life in him. Christians aren't perfect, but we have a perfect King. And I would encourage you to find out more about him. And you can do that if you take away this and give it a read. It's the Gospel of John, as I mentioned earlier on, an account of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. But you can also take this book here as well. We've got two copies on the free book table in the foyer. How Christianity Transformed the World. It's a whole book. And you could write more than this book anyway. That lists and accounts of all the many good things that Christianity has brought the world. There are many bad things that Christians have done, but there are many, many good things. Let me look here. There is freedom, religious liberty, justice, the protecting of life, the dignity of women, philanthropy, healthcare, education, the creation mandate, the value of work. And you can find out all about them in this short book. It's free to you if you want to take it in the foyer. Well, I'm going to give you a chance now to write down any questions you might have. Grab another cup of tea or coffee, grab some of the tasty cakes. I'm going to come back in a few minutes and I will attempt to answer your questions briefly and clearly. So off you go and do that. I'll put the music back on for a bit.